Conventions are very geeky focused, very step by step, what to set your stack pointer to and how I found this exploit and how to use it. And then the other half of the talks are often very, you know, law and culture based, sort of what are the societal implications of hacking. And design war is kind of neat because it's both. So I think people who are hackers here who are really into writing assembly code will like this stuff, and also people who are interested in art and design and technology will like this. So there's enough to keep everybody interested. So when I put this up on the website, I set the subtitle to "The Seedy Underbelly of Electronic Engineering." And if you're going to say something, there's a seedy underbelly, well, I have to contrast that with what's out there right now. So this is a screenshot of the kind of jobs that are available on job boards right after I graduated with an electrical engineering degree. So some of the exciting things you can do with an electrical engineering degree apparently are electronic module assembly development engineer, or field service engineer, or systems engineer. I mean, some of these jobs are probably pretty interesting, but one of the things about electrical engineering is I think because the industry is so successful, a lot of people get into these jobs that, well, they don't really do a lot of art or socially effective technology. They're kind of stuck working at this company designing MRI magnets. And so when I graduated, I just didn't want to do this, so I decided, well, let's see what else you can do with electrical engineering. And one of the things is because electrical engineering is so successful and there's just so much technology out there, and I'll touch on this later, is there's a lot of prevalent devices that are very annoying. Like, for example, I'm going to talk about cell phones and televisions. They're so inexpensive that everyone's got them. And so everywhere you go, there's televisions, and they're on, and they're, you know, loud and annoying, and everyone's got cell phones, and they have ringtones, and they're loud and annoying. And there's no incentive for the industry to combat this because, well, they're making so much money. So the seedy underbelly here is design noir. And design noir was coined by two artists, Fiona Rabbi and Tony Dunn. And they're art students at the Royal College of Art in London. And their research was basically architecture and art, but they were also really excited by electronics and technology, and they wanted to see if they could combine art, architecture, and electronics together. And the way they did this was under this umbrella of design noir. And so up there is a quote from cobbled together from the book they wrote called Design Noir. And basically it's, again, this hidden underbelly of real human needs. And it's strange and it's interesting and it's dark. And that's where the noir comes from. So design noir is a combination of design, of architecture, art, and technology, and noir, which is this seedy underbelly. So, of course, this comes from film noir. I have a slide here from a movie called Hidden Desire. So I'm not a film noir expert, but basically 1940s, 1950s, French and American film style that was very dark, very creepy. Many of the characters were sort of anti-heroes. You know, you have the detective who has, you know, a seedy past, and he's trying to right his way, but, you know, he's not always so successful. And then there's the beautiful woman who's comes to him and wants help, and she's the victim, but then it turns out that she's really the killer. So the characters in film noir are not as they seem. And so that's what I want you to kind of capture from the film noir analogy. So an easy way to understand this is Mickey Mouse is to film noir as consumer electronics is to design noir. So Dunn and Rabi, when they wrote this book, Hertzian Space and Design Noir, they were the PhD theses at the Royal College of Art, and they were architects, so they sort of approached this from a conceptual view, and their thesis was actually about people who were scared of electronic waves, so people who were afraid that they'd get cancer from using their cell phone, or that their television was actually affecting them, that the electromagnetic waves from their screens were affecting them psychologically and physically. So they designed, these are two art projects, The project on the left is called the Faraday Chair, and it's a copper mesh enclosed chair, and you crawl inside of it, and because it's a Faraday cage, you're protected from these evil electromagnetic waves, and I guess you need a gas mask for some reason. And then on the right, there's the electrodraft excluder. And so they said this is sort of a portable shield. And they said, the cones are designed to reflect electromagnetic waves. Now, these don't actually work, right? These are conceptual pieces. These cones don't work that way. But that's their approach because they were architects. But I'm an engineer because I studied electrical engineering, so I'm going to present more functional, prototypes of design noir. So this is one of my favorite examples. This is the no contact jacket. There's a website like nocontact.com, and this was done by Adam Witten and Yolanda Nugent from CAVS, the Center for Art and Visual Studies at MIT. And this jacket they built one, and it's a woman's jacket, and the bottom layer is fleece. And then on top of that, there's an insulating neoprene rubber layer. And the outer layer is this metallic fabric that has high-voltage wires woven into it. And so the woman, you'll see in the next photo a more detailed picture, but on the cuff, there's a button. And if she's worried that someone is about to grab her or attack her, she presses the button, and a 500-volt AC generator turns on and electrifies the jacket. Yeah. So, and they actually built this. So here is sort of some more images from a video. Guy grabs her and gets electrocuted. And then you can see sort of at the bottom right there the button. And there's actually a key, so you have to actually put the key in and turn it to turn it on. And then on the left, they actually built a Jacob's ladder, so it actually electrifies, so you can tell when it's on. So, and this guy is an artist, so he has an artist statement. But basically what he's trying to say is, for much of human history, female clothing has been constricting and turns women into victims. It's very hard to run away from someone if you're wearing high heels or if you have a corset on or a huge dress. So what he wants to do is take this sort of victimizing fashion, turn it around, and instead of creating a victim, it empowers her to protect herself from people she doesn't want touching her. So, this is kind of interesting because they only built one, and it's not available for sale. But you can see how this sort of combines art, this sort of they had to design this jacket and make it look nice and wearable, and also sort of electrical engineering had to make it work, as well as this noir element, which fulfills a real human need. Right, this is a real human need. I mean, maybe you've never worried about someone mugging you, but you can understand that some people would be concerned and they'd want this jacket. So I tried to condense design noir into sort of a three-step, four-step process. So the first element is control. By wearing this jacket, she's empowered, she has control over her personal space, she's no longer a victim, and even if she doesn't ever get attacked, she feels safe because she has this jacket on. Second, there's this element of subversion, which is important for design noir. There's no reason why she couldn't carry a gun or a knife, unless guns are, of course, illegal. But, there's no reason for this to be a jacket. She could just as easily carry a taser. But what's interesting is because it's a jacket, the attacker will never know that she's wearing it. And so that kind of creates this topsy-turvy, who's the victim and who's not. He doesn't know that she's about to shock him. Or maybe she, it's basically a method of taking something that was, again, just victimizing fashion, turning it into empowering fashion. And I think that's important for design noir. And third is the critical discourse and dialogue. And that's basically another way of saying some people really hate this project and some people really like it. Some people like it because they can imagine using it, and some people hate it because they can imagine it being used against them. And there's no reason this woman can't wear this jacket out and just shock anybody she passes by. There's no reason that she has to use it against an attacker. So it's kind of interesting. And then the fourth element, which is not in Dunn and Rabi's book, but I've sort of added on, is this agency. Whereas they talked more about projects that were sort of just sketches in a book, I like projects that actually got built and actually work. So if you just want to take one sound bite away from what is design noir, It's basically culture jamming, and it's industrial design and engineering all built into one. So now I'm going to talk about some projects that I've worked on or been part of. And the first one is a TV Begone, and who was built by Mitch Altman, who actually had a talk a few hours ago about microcontrollers. And Mitch really hates TVs. Like, he really hates them. You should go out to drinks with him sometime, because he just will... Anyways. And he decided, like, instead of just hating televisions and just sitting around and being a victim of televisions everywhere, he decided, I'm going to do something about it. So a couple years ago, he designed the TV Begone, and here I have one in its packaging. And basically, it's a universal remote, so just like a remote control that can be programmed for any television, this remote control works on any television, but it only has one button, and that's the off button. So, you know, the way to use it is basically, you know, you're in front of a TV, you point it at, and you know, 5 seconds later, it turns off. So hopefully I'll be able to actually show a video of the kit version. I don't know if you have American Apparel in Berlin, but it's kind of like the McDonald's of fashion. And they have video screens in their stores that sometimes have child porn on them. It's kind of strange. So, do you feel better about that already? Okay. All right. Let's go back to this. So here's a more detailed view of it. You can see that there's one LED, and that's the IR emitter. And there's the one button, and it goes on your keychain. And so what's interesting is that, you know, there's definitely this element of control and empowerment and subversion. But because this is a commercial product, I mean, you can buy this at Target and Walmart for $25, 20 euros. It's interesting because instead of being as subversive as the jacket, because anyone can go buy it, what ended up happening is people sort of added their own subversion by hacking them. And one of the things we did was, luckily Mitch really likes open source hardware as much as I do, and so what we did is we created an open source hardware version, and this is what it looks like. And we had four emitters, so instead of 10 meters away, it works from 50 meters away, which is really nice if you're at a media market, and there's like all the TVs. You just press it and like, they all turn off. I haven't done that yet, but we may. And so, you know, we published the schematic, and it's very simple. It's just a microcontroller and four LEDs and four transistor drivers. And we released all the source code with all the codes. And what's neat is that people, given this low-cost kit, they went out and they really have... I'm impressed with how many hacks have occurred with these devices. So this one person bought 20 IR LEDs, a 9-volt battery, and created an ultra-mega TV Begone. So it's like, this one works from like 100 meters away. And then that wasn't enough for them, so then they grabbed a 555 timer, some parts, and a relay, and they hooked this up to the button. So instead of having to press the button, it's constantly cycling through all the power codes. And then here's the sort of free-soldered, and then they put this in their hat. So then when they walked around, it would turn off any TV they looked at. So what's interesting is instead of, you know, when you had the original TV Begone, you'd actually have to sit and point. And they decided that wasn't subversive enough for them. So they actually added more. And I like that. It's good because it means that this is sort of, people are really understanding that this design noir is about being sneaky. This person, she put it in her old iPod, so she would look like she was looking at her iPod when she was really trying to turn off televisions. And this one, this is the kit version, they put it in a cell phone. So you could pretend like you're text messaging, but really you're turning off TVs everywhere. And one of the nice things about, you know, Mitch having authored this project is when you get to the discourse and dialogue part of design noir, you really get to see it up close and personal. So, for example, you get a lot of really positive comments. So this is someone who says, I got it yesterday! ! I turned off TVs! It's awesome! Nobody even notices! And so this is kind of nice because people understand the point of your project and they go out and they actually use it. And then there's some people who have that opposite response. So this guy said, if you ever turned off a TV around me, I'd kick your fucking ass. There's nothing wrong with TV. TV does not cause violence, okay? If you're wondering if there's a tie, I think this is proof. So I think it's very interesting. I mean, these are very polarizing projects. I mean, there's people who love and hate the jacket, and there's people who love and hate the TV Be Gone. Although when you actually put it in their hand, everyone really loves it. And I've never seen anyone throw it away. Whereas he hates televisions, I'm really tired of cell phones. Everyone's always talking on cell phones so loudly. Everyone has these really loud ringtones. And I decided, well, instead of just complaining about how I hate going to dinner and having it be disrupted by cell phones, I would do something about it. So for my thesis, I decided to do an RF jammer. So this is here. And there's actually a bunch of RF jammer designs on the web, but I wanted to do one that was completely open source and also modular. So using a phase lock loop, and also you can exchange which voltage-controlled oscillator you use. You can change it from cell phone to Wi-Fi to Bluetooth to RFID to GPS. So you can, you know, you can decide what it is that you want to block. And basically, since everyone always asks, like, how does it work? Well, it's really, really simple. Basically, you have the voltage-controlled oscillator, and it oscillates at, like, 2 gigahertz. And then you basically just sweep noise through the band that is used by the device you're trying to jam. So this is a frequency analyzer, and you can see a spectrum analyzer, and you can see that there's just this big square. And that's the frequencies being jammed. And if you kind of look at the bottom, it's where the start and stop is, you can tell that it's 1.9 to 2 gigahertz. That's PCS band. So that would be blocking American cell phones. So basically, when you turn it on, people just get, you know, no signal. Call was lost. So here's a couple that I made for iBeam. iBeam actually commissioned me to finish this project. They're an art group in New York, and they auctioned these off. And here's just some images, because people want to usually look up close. You can see the strip line antennas on the top, so the antennas are actually built in. So we often end up using these in cabs, because I don't know if here, but in America, cabbies are always talking on their wireless phones, so they end up getting into accidents. So it's important to have this one of these with you for your safety, so you can turn this on. And you can see there's actually a cell phone battery inside that's used. And there's some more detailed photos of the voltage-controlled oscillator, and on the other side, the phase lock loop and the digital section. So one of the problems with cell phone jammers is that in America we have the FCC, and they actually have a lot of laws about who can use spectrum and what you can do. Turns out that harmful interference, basically trying to disable another device, including even kits or parts, is illegal. And in specific, the manufacture, importation, sale, or offer of sale, including advertising, of devices designed to block or jam wireless transmissions is prohibited. Fines for a first offense can range as high as $11,000 for each violation. That's like 30 euros. Or imprisonment for up to 1 year. But it turns out that they actually don't say anything about documentation. They never say it's illegal to teach people how to make cell phone jammers. So I'm assuming it's, I don't know, nobody's broken down my door yet, but I'm assuming that this actually is okay. So what I did is I just open sourced the whole thing. And so I have a website with, you know, step-by-step instructions, and here's the parts list, or part of it. There's dozens of parts, but sort of, you know, all the parts, of course, are easy to get from any electronics supply website. You can, you know, build it yourself. So you can go through each part, open up the data sheet, order it from the website. They show up at your door. This is the circuit board layout. It's a double-sided circuit board. So, you know, some people have etched them, but you can also send it away and have it made by a circuit board house. And then, you know, there's instructions on, you know, how to build it step by step, test the power supply, test the oscillators, test the phase lock loop. So again, I mean, you can see how using the TV Be Gone or using the cell phone jammer sort of create this element of control. Taking back personal space is how I framed it, instead of having your eyeballs and your ears being attacked by televisions and cell phones. Now you have a way of controlling that space for you. And subversion, of course, you know, using the TV Be Gone, you can be very secretive about it. And most people don't even understand, like, most people aren't aware that these exist. So you know, you can go ahead and turn off a TV and most people will just be like, what happened, if they even notice. And then the critical discourse and dialogue, which is people sort of talking about whether they think this is a good idea or a bad idea. And again, the functionality agency, I mean, you can buy this TV, be gone, and the first time you use it, you're really excited because you just did something really kind of wrong, but at the same time feels really good. And I think that's an important part of design noir. You have to have that agency. So I also got some reactions a year ago, exactly when I released the Wavebubble project. So some people really liked it because they could think of situations in which they were in a movie theater or a church or a coffee house, and people's phones were ringing, or you know, even in classes, the phones were ringing, or people talking on the phone rudely. And so a lot of people said, like, I really want one. I'm going to build it. And in fact, on my website, there's a wiki now, and a couple dozen people are building them and successfully. So that's kind of good. And they share a lot of the techniques that they used. And then some people were really angry, and some people thought I was a terrorist because this technology could be used for evil. So that's actually important. I mean, I don't necessarily think that terrorists use these devices. In fact, the U.S. Army uses cell phone jammers, or has used cell phone jammers to block IEDs in Iraq because they're often they use cell phones to trigger them. But I think that people get very offended because they think of situations in which they may have had an important phone call, or they may have an important phone call, and they don't want to be blocked. What I really liked was this one fellow actually sort of, without having read about design noir, sort of understood the whole concept behind it. So that was good. Somebody got the point of the project. Okay, great. Thanks. I was told that there would be, I should leave lots of time for questions. So if people have questions, they should go to the microphones. And there's the URL again if you want to go to the website.
Hello?
Hello. Oh,
hey, it's working. Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your talk. I really enjoyed it. When you mentioned that you really hated mobile phones, I was wondering if you'd thought about that other recent annoying output of mobile phones. I don't know if it's happened in the US, but ever since phones started being able to play MP3s as ringtones,
yeah,
people, it's sort of like everyone has drunk some bad tap water and they've forgotten about the invention of headphones. And people are walking around listening to really shitty, tinny music on their mobile phones.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there's nothing we can do radio jamming-wise to stop that. Do you know what we can do that doesn't involve like a brick?
What's really interesting, well, bricks do work, but what's interesting is actually a lot of people ask me if there's a way to block car speakers. Apparently, like they're everyone sort of or car alarms. If you don't use the ringtone, if the ringtone is not actually a ringtone, unfortunately, I haven't quite figured out how you could do this. Although, if you really wanted to annoy somebody in the audience, Mr. Alex Mavey worked on a project where you could use sonar waves to sort of to create sound in your head. So in theory, if you knew what the song was, you could invert it and create a noise-canceling headphone just in somebody's head. But I don't know. You'll have to tell me if that's actually possible. But sadly, I don't think there. I haven't been able to figure out a way to block car stereos or ringtones, unless you have just a louder ringtone or car stereo. So. Brick may be the only solution right now. Sorry. Any more questions? No? You have to go to the microphone.
Hi.
Oh, too late.
In most talks I heard today, there was actually some cell phone ringing. In yours, there wasn't any. I'm just wondering why.
No, I think there's just bad cell phone reception. I was actually going to do a demo, but the Wi-Fi here is so bad, it wouldn't even matter. But at South by Southwest, we did a demo at South by Southwest, and what was great is that, I don't know if people here do it, but at South by Southwest, everyone was doing Twitter, which is like this SMS blogging thing. And what was great is that people were like trying to send and receive Twitters, and on the log, there was somebody saying, oh, she's about to turn on the... And then there was nothing for 30 minutes. So apparently it worked, and people were really frustrated, so that was kind of good.
Can I? Hello? I had to buy plasma displays for my old company 2 years ago, and they were really nice because you could turn off the remote control.
Yes.
Yeah. I think, I don't know if it dates back then, the TV be gone.
I don't know what's up, but it's interesting because we were just in New York City and we went to the NBC, the National Broadcasting, it's a big television station in the U.S., and they actually have like the studio in New York, and they have TVs showing what they're displaying. We tried to turn them off, and they said can't be turned off by remote control, so somebody knows what Mitch is up to. You can also just put tape over the IR port. This was the first time we saw it, but it could be that people were tired of having their displays be turned off by remote control.
For the music problem, you can buy small devices that submit on radio channels.
Yeah.
And I like to go to the media market or big store and play my music for this time.
Yeah, I feel bad for Media Market. They're just getting attacked here.
Or if I get a haircut or something, they always play bad music.
Yeah.
I change that.
No, it's actually a lot of people buy FM transmitters and use them to transmit into cars. I mean, if the car next to you has a large loud stereo and they're playing radio music, you can, of course, use an iTrip or something similar to just sort of override that signal. That works pretty well. I remember somebody asked me, you know, how could the alarm clock of their neighbor always played Rush Limbaugh in the morning and they wanted to do something about it. So I suggested using that. They said it worked great. So they said it was successful.
Yeah. A couple of years ago, somebody hacked the LED displays in the New York subway.
Hmm.
He sent one in West 4th Street, Washington Square, to say, it was some silly message like, will all the pretty girls please put their hands up or something?
Yeah, it's probably Jenny Holzer or something. Right?
Oh, I was just thinking, you know anything about that?
No, but I wasn't living in New York then, but all LED signs actually use, I'm not exactly sure, but the ones that I've seen use sort of like a wireless keyboard, and it's just like RS-232. Over IR. So, you know, once you, and I don't even think there's any sort of key exchange or anything. So you probably could take any LED IR keyboard and go up to the display and just type in whatever you want.
Okay.
Not that I would suggest you do that, but.
No, just an idea. I mean, of course.
Wait,
of
there's no LED displays in the New York subway. What are you talking about?
Yes, there are on the escalators. Oh, okay. They only say things like keep your hands off the escalator or something, but.
You're thinking of some city with like real subway where they display when the train's showing up next. They don't do that.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, that'd be cool. You should do that. You should hack it so it actually displays when the next train's going to show up. That'd be very useful. Instead of like watch your belongings. It's a good idea. Now you give me a good idea.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll say that cannabis is legal or something.
All right.
So one idea I have for the MP3 ringtone problem is to make a very small portable base station that will send out a ring signal that is simulate an incoming call, and then combine that with a wave bubble.
What, I don't understand. Wait, so
The problem. The problem was the.
Oh, you'll actually make the phone ring, but then
exactly,
shut it off.
Exactly.
Oh, that's a good idea.
There's work being done.
But it's interesting because you have to do like a handshake with the phone. It's not trivial.
No, it isn't. But there's work being done.
Apparently, I've already heard today about work being done on this. So. Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting things is that, you know, this cell phone jammer is literally the denial of service of turning attack on cell phones. It's very brute force, and it works, but of course it's very inelegant. So one of the better ways of doing this, of course, would be if you could actually get like an FPGA or something, do some sort of software cell phone simulation and actually talk to base stations and disable them, or talk to cell phone handsets and sort of get into the handshake mode and then leave them, you know, probably hanging. There's probably some way to get the cell phones to sort of crash if the handshake doesn't work well. So, I mean, some people have mentioned this to me, and I'd be actually very interested to sort of see something like that happen, because it would sort of be the next step in disabling technology.
Did you find the environment at MIT supportive for this kind of projects that are a little more artsy and fun? And do you, if not, do you feel like you would have been better with a less formal education?
I assure you that all the engineers at MIT never considered me an engineer, and all the artists never considered me an artist. So it worked out really well. But it doesn't really matter where you go to school if you want to do this sort of stuff. I mean, again, I mean, I don't know where Mitch went to school or if he went to school.
Do you think
he didn't. Okay, so it turns out you can, like, drop out and do this sort of technology. You don't need to have a formal education.
But do you find your degree gives you sort of a step up from amateur hobbyists or designers or...
Only in that I know some basic transistor theory. MIT doesn't really teach you how to fuck with cell phones, unfortunately. But and again, it doesn't really matter. Any education you get will be useful if you want to do electrical engineering. It's very hard to learn on your own. But if you just want to be a troublemaker, again, start tomorrow or today even.
Well, I was just thinking that maybe an MIT troublemaker would get more press or more sort of attention.
Historically, it seems that that's true, but that's mostly just because people like to see MIT kids get in trouble.
Yeah. Hello. I just wondered if you, what are your political thoughts about this subject? Because you're just culture jamming or just making fun? Do you have any deeper political meaning with it? What you wanna? What's your goal in the end? Do you want to just subvert?
Maybe I'm just sort of like a little bit of a nihilist, but I've never found that anyone who's a culture jammer really had very strong political motives. I mean, mostly they just wanted to crawl on top of billboards and fuck them up, right? And then they usually had they needed an excuse, so that it was like this message. But I think it is important for people to understand that the technologies that are all around us, you should be able to control your personal space and react to it. I didn't build a cell phone jammer to make a political statement. I built it to make a personal statement, which is I'm tired of going out with significant others to diners and then having them with their cell phones ringing and then talking instead of having time together. So I don't think there's the political on the small scale and political on the big scale. I'm not out to attack Vodafone or T-Mobile. But I think that if personally you think that this is a goal, then I think that sort of counts as a political statement, but a selfish one.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Any more? Any more questions? Oh.
You mentioned that people find it easy to think of examples where they had a call they really wanted, or the person who said he would kick your ass if you turned off his television. And I wanted to recount a tiny anecdote that about 5 years ago, I was in an emergency room with a partner who had a hand wound, a bleeding hand wound. Mm. And the television in the emergency room was playing Jaws.
Wow.
Which is, full of blood and trauma. And everyone in the emergency room wanted it off. And then when the movie was over, it turned out...
This is a perfect advertisement. Yeah. Mitch, you should contact this woman for...
When the movie was over, it turned out that television station was playing the movie Jaws over and over again for the entire weekend.
Okay, it's interesting because a lot of people always say... this cell phone jammer is the worst thing ever. What if a doctor needs to do, there's a heart attack, and then 911, and then some terrorists show up, and they take, and then somebody gets stabbed, and then, you're running. I mean, there's always these what-if situations, but, again, as you said, most people, all the situations which people would say, I could have used that, are real, whereas all the situations where they imagine, I've never heard of anyone actually saying, I was in a terrorist situation, and because there were cell phone jammers, it wasn't resolved and people got killed. I mean, this is sort of, it's kind of in a very American way of viewing things. It's sort of the worst possible situation, and, how dare you do that? So it's interesting that there is this fight between, what you would want to use and what you wouldn't want to have used against you. So that's why I think it's interesting. That's why there's so much discourse and dialogue surrounding these projects, why they're so polarizing. Any more questions?
This design, Noah, seems to be some kind of destructive So, like you said it yourself, disabling technology. The jacket disables the attacker. The jammer disables cell phones and something like this. Is there a design noir way of empowerment that doesn't disable something else?
Okay, well, you asked for it. I'm going to play the Kelly Dobson video so that you'll see it. And I didn't actually include this because, Keynote crashed. Bye-bye. One second, if you don't mind. So Kelly Dobson is a student who is in my research group, and she actually kind of had a design noir feel to all of her work, but she was much happier than me. Maybe she had more coffee in the morning, I don't know. But one of the projects she did when she first showed up was Scream Body, and basically I'll just play this video. What happened is that she showed up and spent 5 years at the Media Lab, and no matter what she did, everyone only referred to this project that she did on her first semester, so this kind of happens. Let me see if I can full fit to screen. Oh, you know what? I don't have audio. Oh, shoot. Well, I'll play it anyways, and I'll just mimic what she says. Oh, okay. I don't know if that's going to work, but we'll try. Stop. Okay, sorry. Okay. You hear that? Oh, awesome. Okay.
Hi, I'm Kelly, and this is my screen body. Do you ever find yourself in a situation where you really have to scream, but you can't because you're at work, or you're in a classroom, or you're watching your children, or you're in any number of situations where it's just not permitted? Well, Scream Body is a portable space for screaming. When a user screams into Scream Body, their scream is silenced. But it is also recorded for later release, where, when, and how the user chooses. The main body of Scream Body is constructed of open cell polyurethane foam with a latex barrier.
So now she's sort of explaining the technology behind it.
These two together act to absorb and contain the sound of the scream.
Basically, she sort of molded this foam. She's actually also an architecture student or art student. And so she basically made this foam squeezable thing, put a bunch of electronics and a recorder in it so that she could record and output her scream. So again, this is a real human need. She apparently needs to scream in public locations, but it's inappropriate because otherwise somebody would make like a scream jammer. So what she did is she created this device that allowed her to save that scream and then release it later in the street where it wouldn't bother anybody. So this allows her to, be empowered and get that control back. And it's also a little subversive. I mean, it's a little weird to carry around this pouch of screaming. But I think this is another good example of design noir. I mean, again, she's not as angry and hateful as I am. Her next project, which she did, she actually did machine therapy. So it was some people getting to know technology and how technology helps them with their emotions. So this is part of it. The other one was a project called Blendy 2000, which I don't have the video for, but it's basically her screaming with a blender and the blender screams back. You have to see it. It's online. But she's extremely creative and again, taking electrical engineering and art and combining it to make products that are useful to her. But I think that's all. I think that answers your question. All right. Any other questions?
Hi. Suppose that I enjoy using Wave Bubble on a regular daily basis. What's the danger of being discovered because the cell phone I carry myself is being also jammed every time I use it. So if I disconnect like 15 times a day, that's about the frequency I'd like to use it. Being on trains.
So you have the cell phone jam or somebody else does?
No, I'm using it and I have my cell phone with me. I'm here.
Oh, here you go. Sorry, I can't, it's blinding. So you have it and you have a cell phone and you want to be able to make calls and also jam them?
No. It's just simply my phone is online. It's connected to GSM network. Mm. And then I use the jammer several times. So would there be a danger of being discovered?
Well, I mean, you don't have to have it out in front of you. You can put it in your bag.
No. I mean, my network operator.
Oh, would they notice? Well, I mean, you can go into a building and not get reception. There's no reason that they would think that you would be using a jammer. The phone itself, it's actually being jammed at the analog front end. It's not happening at the digital level. So it's not like the chip can tell that it's being jammed. It's just like, oh, I'm not getting enough signal.
Okay.
So I won't say never, but considering that phones stop working once in a while, I don't see why it would be detectable.
Let me ask more technically. My disconnects, are they being logged on the operator side?
That's a great question. I don't know. I mean, you're going to have to ask your operator.
I don't think so.
I mean, like, uh-huh. I mean, the phone, I mean, in theory, if it keeps pinging, if it's constantly pinging back and forth, yes, they can tell when you're offline. Mm-hmm. I guess only recent phones do that for data connections. Most phones don't connect constantly. They only connect when they receive a call. But I'm actually not a cell phone engineer, so I don't know, like, deep down details of how the network works.
I just wonder.
But I don't think it's an issue, again, because, you know, if you go to the subway, it stops working. So how would they know the difference?
Thanks anyway.
Sure.
Hello. I apologize, firstly, if this question is based off my technical ignorance. But I was wondering if the RFID jamming function of the device that you have could interfere or affect the transportation RFID cards that are quite popular in Asian cities, so say Hong Kong or Tokyo, where everyone uses a RFID card to enter in a metropolitan subway?
Well, I mean, it depends. I mean, there's like dozens of RFID frequencies, so it, of course, depends on what frequency. I haven't actually tested it with I haven't directly tested it with RFID because I just don't own any RFID readers or writers. But there's no, I mean, if you're putting noise onto a band, it's just not going to work, so it probably just wouldn't be functional. I mean, it depends on how it's designed. I mean, if it's something that you have to slip in.
Touch.
Or touch. I mean, it depends on how the reader is designed. I mean, if these are actually RFID and not like, magnetic, mm-hmm. then which would be completely different, then yeah, I mean, I could see how they would not work, but then it wouldn't function.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Do you really hate when people take the subway? That's like really bizarre. I don't think, the thing is that, you know, if there's multiple stalls, you couldn't jam them all. You could also just stand in front of them, right, and stop people from going through. They're very polite in Japan, so they would just wait till you moved. They wouldn't push you. Some of those bizarre questions. Any other questions?
Yes.
Can't see where the people
are. Can you hear me? Hello? My question is about the legal situation, or if you know any cases or issues where people really get themselves into trouble by doing this stuff.
I don't actually know personally of anyone who has gotten fined or arrested for cell phone jamming or turning TVs off. It's actually interesting. I'm not convinced that, at least in America, using a TV be gone is illegal. If you're on public property and you turn off a TV on private property, because of the way the federal law is constructed, I think that's actually fine because you're not physically entering their space. It's just like light waves. So that's not illegal. Although if you're on private property, of course, they can kick you out. I'm sure somebody has gotten kicked out of, you know, Media Market for turning off TVs. I mean, there's videos on YouTube of people going into Best Buy and they just sit there for an hour and just keep on turning off the TVs. Like, eventually, someone's going to notice a 15-year-old kid, like, who just keeps smiling and, like, the TV's turned off. like looks very suspicious. But I mean, there's definitely people in the U.S. every once in a while who get in trouble for pirate radio stations or people who blatantly use cell phone jammers in their restaurants or churches or university lecture halls. I think they get fined, but I mean, I haven't heard of a major case where somebody, you know, I mean, it's not a major deal. You usually just get fined and okay. They tell you, give me the cell phone jammer. But there's just not that many of them. So it's very hard to catch someone with a 15-foot radius jammer. I mean, how can you tell that they were having a jammer? You'd have to actually search them.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
You have 3 more minutes of questions, so probably like 1 or 2 more questions.
Yeah. Back when I was a kid, we used to sneak into the stereo shops and search. Sneak into stereo shops and turn off the TVs with our own remotes.
Yeah.
The other thing we used to do was turn off the sound really loud.
Yes.
Have you considered making a TV be loud or something like that?
It's actually interesting. Some because we released the code for the TV Be Gone kit open source, people have actually been modifying it, and they're saying, well, I don't want it to be an off or on power, you know, power switch. I actually want to mute TVs or make them really, really loud or change the channel. So there's actually firmware mods that you can reprogram the kit so that it'll like change channels instead, which could be about as funny. So for example, if you were in front of like the NBC studio, you could change it to like ABC or Fox News. I don't know. So maybe you could find that funny. But yeah, I mean, that's any kind of troublemaking, you know, I approve of. So yeah, sure. I mean, you don't need the TV Be Gone. You can get a universal remote. What's nice about the TV Be Gone is it's very small, so you can hide it in your hand very easily. Yeah. Okay, one more question.
Yeah. In the Netherlands, we're starting apparently to use RFID cards to get on the trains and the subways. You can't actually, without the RFID card, you wouldn't be able to get on the subway. On RFID frequency, do you have any idea what the range would be on blocking these things? And do you need to stand next to the reader or like 5 meters apart? Or?
I'm pretty ignorant about RFID, especially since there's so many standards. But RFID usually works on such a short level because it's, you know, literally you have to like power the device in such short range. So I'd say, you know, you'd probably have to, unless you had a strong jammer which you can build, you probably have to be a couple feet away. But I mean, there's people who have taken the wave bubble and added more and more high power 5-watt gain stages so that works from 100 feet away or 100 meters away. I mean, there's no reason why you couldn't, you know, instead of antennas, you just attach more gain stages. As long as you have a car battery, you're good to go. That's a little suspicious to be in the train station with a car battery. But technically, I can't imagine why you couldn't do this, but that's not to say that. Again, I have very little experience with RFID, so it's not used very much in the U.S. So most people have not used it for that purpose. So I haven't gotten any feedback. Whereas I've gotten feedback from people using it with GPS and cell phones and Wi-Fi. Okay. Great, Milan. Great. Well, thanks for all the questions. This was awesome. Thank you. One more thing. Sorry. Mitch and I brought like 100 TV Be Gone kits, and we're going to be holding workshops. Hopefully it's going to be mostly Mitch. But we'll be holding workshops in the hacking area in the next couple days. So if you have a couple euros, you know, to pay for the parts and you want to learn how to solder, you can build your own TV Be Gone and turn off Media Market, and they'll hate us. And the CCC will never be allowed here again. Hooray. Okay.